As always, Donald Trump is in the news, this time for being the first former president to ever be indicted. What does the future look like for the former president, and how should Catholics view both his campaign for president and the campaign to destroy him? That's what we're going to talk about today on Crisis Point. Hello, I'm Eric Sammons, your host and the editor-in-chief of Crisis Magazine. Before we get started, encourage people to smash that like button, to subscribe to the channel, but don't hit the notify bell because you have other things to do with your life. Also, I want to encourage people to follow us on social media at Crisis Mag at all the major social media outlets. Also, you could donate to us, crisismagazine.com/donate. We produce all of our content for free, offer it for free, but it's not free to produce. So I would appreciate any donations, crisismagazine.com/donate. Okay, so let's get started. So today, which is April 4th, 2023, Donald Trump is appearing in New York at his arraignment because he was indicted on supposedly 34 felony counts by the New York DA. And so essentially, we don't know all the details. Actually, that some of that stuff should come out today of exactly what he's being indicted for. But it appears it's related to him supposedly having hush money sent to a porn star that he had relations with and wanted to quiet, keep that from getting out during the 2016 campaign. And so it's kind of messy, kind of ugly. Here's the thing. Everybody knows, every single person on both sides, whether you love Trump or hate Trump, knows this is 100% politically motivated. Every president that we've had in my lifetime, at least going, okay, let's just go back to Bill Clinton, has something that they should be indicted for. All the living presidents, all the living former presidents has something you should be indicted for. Frankly, all of them should be indicted for war crimes, in my opinion. But I mean, just look at Bill Clinton. If we're talking about a former president that did things while in office or running for office that were of an unseemly nature, like what they're accusing Donald Trump of, well, then Bill Clinton should be at the top of that list. But of course, we all know there's no chance that Bill Clinton will be indicted because Bill Clinton is a Democrat. Bill Clinton is a liberal, and he is supportive of the elites. And so therefore, they won't touch him. Donald Trump, however, is seen as an enemy of the elites. And so they will do anything and everything they can to try to silence him. Now, what's amazing about this in my mind, now, okay, first of all, just to be clear, I'm not supportive of married men having relations with porn stars or anybody else other than their wife. I'm not supportive of giving them hush money to keep quiet. And I am sure there are a lot of things in Donald Trump's life that I am not supportive of and that are not moral. He should go to confession for them. He should become Catholic and go to confession for them. That being said, to pick this as the one thing you're going to indict him on, you know what it kind of proves? It kind of proves they got nothing on them. Because after all, they have been going after Donald Trump now for 8 years. They have been doing everything they can to try to shut him down. They have the whole Russia gate hoax, the whole January 6th, the classified documents at his place, all these various things they have done. They have tried as hard as they can to arrest him, to indict him, to shut him down, to get him in jail. And this is the best they can do? Really? I don't even see why this is illegal, frankly. Yes, it's immoral, but I do understand their argument, the argument, but I mean, it's a joke. The idea that, okay, this was actually campaign funds because this somehow helped his campaign, and so it's a legal campaign contribution, all that stuff. Everybody knows that's a joke. Everybody knows that is the most flimsy excuse to indict him, which tells me he's actually been either very, very good at covering up his crimes, or he really hasn't committed any significant crimes since they've been looking. And so I think that tells us something right there. But I think, though, the other thing is that I can't understand about the left when we're talking about Donald Trump is why they don't get that ignoring him is far better than attacking him from their perspective. If you ignore him, if you had just let him get out of the news once he was out of office, that would have harmed him far more for a 2024 campaign than what they decided to do, which was to spend every day since he left office obsessed with him. Trump derangement syndrome is real. It causes insanity. It causes you to do things that are just, like I said, insane, because they go against your own best interest, what you think are your own best interests. By attacking Trump, you only make him stronger, frankly, because his supporters see this as what they should see it as, a political persecution that has no basis in law or order, anything like that. And the only purpose of it is to try to get him not to run in 2024. I read where I think he's raised $7 million off of the indictment. And I've seen some people criticize him, like conservative types criticize him for doing so much fundraising off of this. Why? I mean, that's exactly what he should be doing, frankly. If he's going to be politically persecuted and they're going to threaten to throw him in jail and all these other things, might as well take advantage of it and go ahead and fundraise off it. I don't blame him for that. And so ultimately, I think this will backfire on the Trump haters, because I think the normal citizen, even the non like Trump sycophant who just only Trump is always right, they see this for what it is. This is a very, very bad precedent. And this is actually what's more concerning than Trump being indicted and the possibility that Trump can't run in 2024, is the fact that it's a really big deal that they decided to go there. Meaning they decided, we're going to have a former president indicted on some made up, basically, charges at some local, you know, New York City, at some local courthouse. Because it's basically been understood that our presidents, they don't get indicted. This stuff doesn't happen to you once you leave office. And there's a reason for that. Like I said, if they decided, okay, we're actually going to take seriously the Constitution and what powers it gives to the president, and we're going to now indict former presidents on the ways that they didn't follow the Constitution, I'm okay with that if we apply it across the board. Because I'd love to put the fear of God in future presidents that they know they can't do things like just simply bomb U.S., you know, drone U.S. citizens without any recourse. I mean, that's what Obama did. They can't declare wars basically for no, based on lies like Bush did. They can't, I mean, Clinton, he basically also went along with the war in Bosnia and other places, unconstitutionally supported these things. There's a lot of things with Clinton, a lot of things with Bush, and a lot of things with Obama. What am I talking about? So if we want to do that, okay, I'm fine with that. But if we're just going to make it where it's like this, where it's just some petty, if one person in power can just indict a former president because he doesn't like him, which is essentially what's happening here, we're just descending into anarchy at this point. Because what it does, I mean, I saw somebody today on Twitter who was saying, hey, I'm glad, had a picture of Obama and said, my president never got indicted on, you know, for 34 felonies. And I'm like, don't you realize that your president one day will get indicted for felonies? Because if this is the way it's going to run, that basically, okay, you're just going to, we're just going to tie up our political enemies in the legal system. Well, two can play that game. In fact, I just saw today that Matt Walsh was calling for that. The political commentator, Matt Walsh, I think most people know who he is, conservative. He's like, hey, if they do it, we should do it too. And so that's a good question. Should we do this? Should conservatives basically play this game as well? I don't think they should. I don't think we should reduce ourselves to their level and basically indict our political enemies and tie them up in the legal system because we don't like them, just because they're doing it. Now, I'm not saying we don't do anything. I'm not saying we just grin and bear it and take it. I personally think what should happen is conservatives should just simply ignore these various laws, these various things that are coming out. We shouldn't just, so for example, Trump should just ignore this stuff in New York. Just simply say, no, I'm not going to go. I mean, DeSantis, give him credit, and Governor Fuller said, we're not going to assist anybody in trying to extradite Trump from Florida, because remember, Trump's residence is in Florida. We're not going to agree to that. Basically, we're going to give him asylum is essentially what he was saying. I think that's what the right should do in general, is everything we can to basically undermine the left's authority to abuse the system by simply not recognizing the system, by simply ignoring these indictments. So Trump just says, I'm not going to do anything about it. I mean, because what he would be doing is he would be pushing the crisis, the chaos. Because then when he visits New York at some point in the future, because after all, that's where he's from, he would at some point go back to New York. Let's say he's going there for a campaign visit. He basically just put in their face, what are you going to do, arrest me? I have the Secret Service here. What would the Secret Service do? And then if they did try to arrest him on a campaign rally, can you imagine the chaos of that? I think that's a better scene than what he's doing. And I think in general, that's exactly how conservatives should react to the way the left is abusing political power and legal power, is to ignore it and simply refuse to acknowledge their power. If they abuse it, they don't have it then. Somebody mentioned in the comments, it would limit his ability to travel the country. But that's the point, is you simply do it anyway. You travel, you do everything you can, and you force them to literally try to take you by force. I mean, do you really think they're going to go that far? And if they do, that's not a bad thing, because it would show how corrupt and how evil they are. I mean, think about how, I mean, Trump, that would be the greatest campaign video ever, would be a clip of him being basically manhandled by some local police or something in New York or whatever. I mean, is the Secret Service even going to allow that? I mean, the whole point of this is you're exposing the corruption. You're exposing the abuse that they're doing. So that, I mean, I'm not, you know, I understand Matt Walsh's point that we just simply do the same thing. I don't like it, because I feel like you don't respond to abuse with abuse. That's not the way that you do things. Instead, you expose that abuse and you don't legitimize the authority behind the abuse. That would be my argument for that. So my opinion of the Trump indictment is that clearly it's political. Clearly, it's just persecution, and there's no reason that Trump should go along with this, and nobody else should either. Now, like I mentioned, I think that this will help Trump in his 2024 campaign. So let's talk about the 2024 campaign for a little bit. I know it's a little bit early, but it's actually not that early. It's March. I assume there's going to be some primary debates at the end of the year. The primaries start less than a year from now, and the way our political schedule works, calendar works, you know, we're already talking about, obviously. Now, I think a few things. First of all, it looks like they're going to keep Biden around for 2024. So it looks like he probably will be the candidate in 2024. And I assume they'll keep Harris as his running mate, and so she can cackle her way back into the vice president's office. And so on the GOP side, I think what we have is, I mean, right now it looks like it's just Trump versus DeSantis, because some other people have, Nikki Haley and some others, I think John Bolton, have declared they're going to run for president. They're all a joke. I mean, there's nobody of that you can even take seriously that is running for president on the GOP side, other than Donald Trump, obviously, and Ron DeSantis. And so what are the advantages that Trump has? Obviously, he's in the lead in the polls. He has the advantage that his name is the name. I mean, there's literally not one political conversation that happens in this country that doesn't somehow come around to Trump. I mean, he is the center. I mean, if you look at the center of the political universe, he's right there in the center, and everything revolves around him. I mean, there's just no question about that. And that's on both sides of the aisle, and third parties, everybody talks about is Donald Trump. And so he has that advantage. He also has the advantage that the left is just insane when it comes to him. They have Trump derangement syndrome. And so all of his, all the attacks against him help him. And he also has evangelized. He has some very, very diehard supporters. And I'll talk about that a little bit more in a minute. But he has some very diehard supporters who will go to the mat for him. I mean, that's what you saw. The reason people like John McCain and Mitt Romney had no chance to win back in 2008, 2012 is because nobody really cared about them. I mean, conservatives were like, yeah, okay, I guess we got to vote for this guy. They weren't pounding the pavement, going door to door, supporting him. Trump has people like that. He still has people like that. He also, another advantage Trump has is he actually has a record of success. I have a lot of criticisms of his time in office, but there is no way you cannot argue that he had a lot of successes as well. Obviously, the number one success was the Supreme Court appointments. From a conservative standpoint, you just can't criticize them. Yeah, they're not perfect necessarily. And maybe he got lucky and he shouldn't have gotten. Maybe some of these people that he picked were better than he had expected them to be or had any right to think they would be. But the fact is they overturned Roe. And they've also done some other decent decisions as well. Another big advantage of Trump is he is just a master, the master at self-promotion, which is what a political candidate needs to be good at. And there's nobody better than Donald Trump. He just is so good at taking the attacks against him and turning them to his advantage. He is so good at standing up to the leftist media, better than anybody. I think DeSantis is showing he's very good at that too. But nobody's better than Donald Trump at standing up to the leftist media. You have to give him credit for that. You have to understand how good he is at that. That's the reason he won 2016. It's the reason he's reached the heights he has, because he can handle and manipulate the media. I mean, the fact that they just still don't get it, that they never realize maybe if we ignore him, it might be better, just shows how good he is at manipulating them. It's just like it's like two kids, like two brothers. Who are and one of them just keeps on needling the other one, like, you're gonna do this, 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 you're gonna do this. And the other brother doesn't realize if he just ignores him, the first brother, the annoying brother, will stop eventually and he'll never do it again because he really doesn't know him. But what does he do? The brother just gets annoyed, like, stop, stop, stop. And so he keeps on, you're gonna do this, you're gonna do this, you're gonna do this. That's what Trump's like with the media. He just knows exactly how to push their buttons so they can't ignore him. Now, here's the thing though. Donald Trump has some significant hurdles in 2024. I do not think it is the same as 2016, because 2016, he had the advantage of being the outsider. He had the advantage of having no political record. He had the advantage of being able to say anything he wanted to, and nobody, and he could say, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. And nobody could say you're not going to, because he had no record behind him. That was his advantage over all the other candidates. We had other advantages, but that's a main advantage you have as a non-political candidate, as a non-politician running for president. You have no record. You can just say, I'm going to do this. And everybody has to basically say, okay, I guess he will do that. Well, now we have 4 years of Donald Trump as president to look at and to see. And so I do think he has some hurdles. The first hurdle I think he has is that Donald Trump has always defined himself as a winner. That's what he always calls himself. I mean, basically, he's a winner. He wins. He loves to say that. And if you look at his life, yes, he's got the bankruptcies and other issues, but eventually he does always come out on top. He has won. In the game of life, not in the way Catholics see it, obviously, but in the way a politician would see it, he has won. However, now he's a loser. He lost 2020. Yes, I recognize that many of his supporters do not believe that he legitimately lost, but the average American looks at him as the loser. And not only as a loser, but as a sore loser. A lot of Americans really do see him as a sore loser, because even though he claimed he won, he claimed he's going to prove exactly how he won, but he never did prove it, at least legally. I mean, that's how most people look at it. And so basically, though, he's now looked upon as a loser. And likewise, when he made a big deal leading up to January 6th. Now, just to be clear, I do not think he called for violence. I don't think, you know, I think a lot of that was actually, I do think there was probably some effort to discredit the Trump movement with January 6th by the elite. I mean, a lot of the scenes we saw with like the Viking guy being led through the chambers, through the Senate and all of that. I think there's a lot of funny business going on there. But ultimately, though, January 6th did not help him in the eyes of the public. And in fact, I think January 6th really hurt him with at least part of his base, because he refused to really defend the people who were treated unjustly on January 6th, the people who went in and were arrested and thrown into jail and all those things happened. He threw them under the bus. Now, he said some things recently that are a little bit more supportive, but initially he threw them under the bus, and for a long time he did. There have been men and women, I think women as well, but at least men, who have been in jail for a very long time for basically nothing because they were at January 6th. They went into the Senate building. And Donald Trump did nothing to support them, did nothing to try to get them out to say, yes, this is unjust or anything like that. And I think that is a major thing against him. I know a lot of people who are very pro-Trump. I was not pro-Trump. I admit it freely. I voted for him in 2020. I did not vote for him in 2016. And so I'm not like anti-Trump either. I'm just not a huge Trump fan. But I know I have a lot of friends. I know a lot of people who are huge on Trump, and they did not like how he handled January 6th. They were not happy about that. So that's a big disadvantage for him. Another big challenge he has, I think, going into 2024 is his COVID response. He can try to spin however he wants, but we remember when COVID hit, he was a big supporter of the lockdowns. I still remember when in Georgia was the first governor who wanted to ease up the lockdowns, who had had lockdowns in May of that year, and he attacked him. He was a Republican governor who decided to ease up on the lockdowns in May of 2020, and Trump attacked him and basically said he shouldn't do that. And Trump was he can spin it however he wants, but history shows he was supportive of lockdowns. I get that it was the governors who did lockdowns, but if Trump had come out and not been for the 15 days to slow the spread or whatever they were saying at that time, if he had been from day one against that, or even after 15 days, if he initially said 15 days to slow the spread, okay, I'll go along, but then realize what a sham it was. If he had come out against it hard then, you know there would have been a lot of Republican governors who would have caved, who would have quickly dropped the lockdowns if there had been a political person like Donald Trump behind them. But he didn't. He supported it strongly. He supported shutting down the economy. He did all these things. And we remember that. He also was the one who pushed the vaccines, Operation Warp Speed. He pushed the vaccines, which we've seen a lot of problems with the vaccines. Hopefully YouTube's not going to take this down for me just saying that one line. But we know, people who are watching this, listening to this, know what I'm talking about. And he's been a big backer of the vaccines, and he still is. And of course, we have Fauci. He kept Fauci in power. He kept them. He could have removed Fauci at any point. Okay, let's say he kept Fauci on initially. Fine, I get it. He was there, though, for months and months, and he could have cut Fauci out in May of 2020, June, July. I mean, most of us, I mean, I was against lockdowns from day one. I thought lockdowns were a terrible response no matter what. But I get that some people weren't really sure. But by end of May, June, most smart people realized this was all just ridiculous. And he did not. He did not get rid of Fauci. He allowed Fauci to continue on. And so this is on his watch. He needs to take responsibility for that. And that's something that Donald Trump never does. He never apologized. He's never said he was wrong. And I get that helps him in some cases politically, but I really think it hurts. I really think if he just came out and said, listen, that was a mistake on my part. I shouldn't have done that. I won't do that again. Guaranteed. No way. I believe him. I'd be like, okay, I get it. But no, he didn't. In fact, he's even attacked DeSantis for his COVID response, which I'll get into in a second. So I really feel like the COVID thing is probably the biggest issue that hangs over Trump going 2024, because a lot of his most diehard supporters were very much opposed to the COVID regime. And so they're not happy with the way he handled that. And then, of course, the other big disadvantage is DeSantis himself. Now, DeSantis initially locked down. He initially kind of went along with everything. But here's the difference between him and Trump. By August, he reversed course. he did of 2020. He didn't just reverse course. I mean, he didn't just say, okay, we're not going to do lockdowns anymore. He went full on anti-COVID regime. He started support going against the lockdowns, against the vaccine mandates, against the mask mandates, all that stuff he went against. He had his Pete, and he had good people under him too, like the medical director for the state. Of the person was against a lot of the things that the elite establishment was saying about COVID. And so he really did do a good job. Yes, he didn't do good at first, but then he changed course. And that's what you look for in a politician. Not that they're perfect. A leader is somebody who realizes at some point, oh crap, I made a mistake. I got to change direction and do the right thing here. And that's what DeSantis did. And it's not what Trump has done. He went the wrong direction first and he continued going the wrong direction. And so I really think that that's something that really hurts Trump. And the fact that he's attacking DeSantis, I know a lot of pro-Trump people who are scratching their head over that. They do not understand why he's attacking DeSantis. But that's Trump's modus operandi, is basically he just attacks anybody he thinks might be in his way. And that's done well for him. I mean, obviously 2016 when he did that, he got rid of Jeb within like 5 minutes. He got rid of Cruz, took a little bit longer. We got rid of Cruz doing that. Got rid of Rand Paul, got rid of all his Marco Rubio. Don't even remember half the other people who were running back then because he destroyed them so quickly. That's his way he does it. But at the same time, it doesn't seem like this is the way that he should be going against DeSantis. It really is turning a lot of conservatives off that he should be that he is going after DeSantis so hard. It's not just like he's saying, I don't think DeSantis is doing this right. I mean, he's doing his typical Ron DeSantimonious, and he's attacking him. He's attacking DeSantis for his COVID response. It's like, wait a second. We know. Everybody knows. It's like he wants to warp reality into something it's not. He just wants to rewrite history so that it wasn't him who was really bad on COVID and DeSantis who got really good on COVID. Instead, he wants to make it like DeSantis was the one who was bad and he was good. That's not what happened. That is just not what happened. And again, if he just would acknowledge that and admit that he made a mistake and he wouldn't do it again, I think that'd go a long way. But that's not his style. It's not what he's going to do. Now, that all being said, these disadvantages, I don't think there's any way you can count Trump out. I don't care if he's sitting in a jail cell. I'm not going to predict that he won't win an election because he's overcome a lot of odds in the past. And so it's not saying he can't win. That being said, I personally think he is the least likely GOP candidate to beat Biden in 2024. The reason is because there is a lot of Trump fatigue out there. There's a lot of fatigue from regular conservatives, not necessarily the biggest Trump supporters, that they just are just tired of him, and they're not gonna come out for him. And by the way, I'm assuming that there's a fair election. I'm not saying that actually is a good assumption. I'm just saying assuming a fair election. Obviously, if there's not a fair election, if it's stolen, it's stolen. But assuming it's not stolen, I think Trump does not beat Biden in 2024. Because I think it's just too much against him as far as all these things I've been talking about. And here's the bigger fear, though. If he doesn't win the GOP nomination, I think he goes scorched earth and he destroys the GOP's chances to win. So I personally think there's a really good chance Biden wins 2024. Now, a lot of things can happen between now and then. Biden could die and they can't prop him up any longer. And Kamala's the candidate or something like that. But I'm just saying if it's a Biden-Kamala ticket, and Trump is the candidate, I don't think Trump wins. And if Trump isn't the candidate, I think he destroys the GOP's chances to win. So I think either way, Biden has a very good path to winning re-election. I hope I'm wrong. I'm not. And by the way, just to be clear, I will make my own position clear here. I have not decided who I would vote for in 2024. I'm going to wait to see who the candidates are. And I'm not sure who I'd vote for. I'm not registered as a Republican, so I actually don't vote in the GOP primary. But if I were, how would I vote? I don't know. I probably would vote for DeSantis if it was Trump versus DeSantis. That's the most likely person I'd vote for in the GOP primary. But I'm not even like willing to say that at this point because I'm just going to wait and see because I have some issues with DeSantis as well. Now, I annoy people to no end when I say this, but I often vote third party. I have voted in 9 presidential elections in my lifetime. In 4 of those elections, I voted for a third party candidate, and only in 5 of them, I voted for the GOP. 4 of those 5, it was for somebody whose last name was Bush, and I regret those votes. I don't regret the vote for Trump. It's the one time I voted for the GOP candidate for president that I look back on, I don't regret. I mean, I don't like either of the Bushes. I mean, I'm not saying I should have just voted third party then too. So that's just kind of where I'm coming from, but I'm not decided. The point is that I'm willing to give Trump a chance even now, even though I think he's got a lot of baggage he did not have in 2020 or 2016, but I'm willing to, you know, be open-minded. Now that brings up a topic I want to mention when it comes to Trump supporters. Last week at Crisis, we ran an article by Jason Negri called Dear Don. It was an open letter to Donald Trump basically saying, I supported you in the past. I voted for you in 16 and 20. And you've done a lot of good things and listed some of those good things. But I'm not going to vote for you. It's time to move on from you. I want to move on. And he kind of insinuated to Ron DeSantis. I ran that article because he had actually written for Crisis in the past, Jason Negri did, about voting Republican in like 2022 and in the past. This is not a Trump derangement syndrome person. This is not a never Trumper or anything like that. This is somebody who voted for Donald Trump and says, I'm moving on. I've heard this from a lot of people, a lot of conservatives, pro-Trump people. And so I thought this is a good thing to put in Crisis because it reflects a lot of the readers of Crisis, frankly. I think they're ready to move on from Donald Trump. Well, I bring that up because, boy, I don't think we've got more negative email and responses, comments to an article since I've been running Crisis for about 2 years now, a little bit over 2 years, than we did with that one article. And now we can get some positive as well, but it was amazing. And here's the thing. And I like that, by the way. I like getting responses, getting feedback. And I had no problem with a few people, one or two, responded by why they thought we shouldn't move on from Donald Trump. I said, hey, that's a good, that's your opinion. That's a good, reasonable argument you're making. However, the vast majority, I mean, I'm talking 98% of all the emails we got from pro-Trump people are basically saying, how dare you run that article? How dare you say that? You're just like you're a never Trumper. You are like the National Review. You hate Donald Trump. You have Trump derangement syndrome. And basically, though, it was unhinged what people were saying. They were not willing to accept that we can be critical towards Donald Trump. And I don't get that. I don't get the idea that we can't criticize. This is the primary season, or we're entering into the primary season. That's exactly when you criticize the candidates within your own party or what have you, in order to say, I would like this one better than this one. This is exactly the time that Donald Trump should be criticized by conservatives. And so the idea that we're not allowed to publicly criticize him, that makes no sense to me. And it's ridiculous. What is the purpose of the primary season? And so I think there is the opposite of the Trump derangement syndrome, and that is the Trump perfection syndrome. The idea that he is the perfect candidate. They'll say, oh, we don't think he's perfect. We know he has these character flaws. But then they will not let you actually talk about how that could impact him as a candidate or as a president. I mean, they really do think that no criticism of Donald Trump should ever be allowed. And I don't get that. And frankly, most of the emails and responses we got that were saying we should never run anything against Trump, they would just repeat talking points. It was like unthinking. They'd repeat Trump talking points that, oh, DeSantis is just is supported by the rhinos and all this other stuff. I mean, it just wasn't even thinking. And so I really feel like we should be allowed to have a healthy debate within conservatism. You should be allowed to defend and criticize Donald Trump, defend and criticize Ron DeSantis, even defend John Bolton. Okay, that might be going a little too far because he's indefensible. He would bring us to World War III within 5 seconds. So at Crisis, we don't endorse a particular candidate. We've run a lot of articles that have been defending Donald Trump, supporting Donald Trump. Okay, oh, Katie on the comments just said, it's like the Pope's splainers. It really is. It is like the Pope's splainers. The Donald Trump super supporters, the ones who have Trump perfection syndrome, they cannot, they basically, oh yeah, of course he's flawed. But then you say any actual flaw or any criticism, they're like, and they freak out about it. Just like the people do with Pope Francis. And I think that's very unhealthy. And so at Crisis, we don't endorse specific candidates. We've run a lot of articles defending Donald Trump, but we will run articles critical of Donald Trump. We will run articles critical of Ron DeSantis and, you know, whoever. Obviously, we run a lot of articles critical of Joe Biden. We actually don't run a ton because what's the point at this point? We all know he's awful. He's evil. He's anti-Catholic to the core in his positions and what he does. So we take arguments from conservatives, from libertarians, from traditionalists who don't even believe in the American political system. I got an article coming out probably in a month or so about defending monarchy, another one against monarchy, because I really feel like that is a healthier way to handle this. This idea of just, okay, we have to defend Donald Trump. He's our guy no matter what, I don't think is healthy. And in fact, one of the things I noticed from a lot of the people who responded with their pro-Trump views is how much they sound like Donald Trump. They don't sound Catholic. I mean, I had one guy who just wrote back and he literally just said, loser. That's his entire email is just saying loser. And I wanted to respond. I don't respond like this, but I will admit here on the podcast, I wanted to respond in something to the effect of the person who sends an email that just has the word loser in it probably should be looking in the mirror. Because what kind of person would send that type of email? Look at what your email stated. So I really think, and a lot of the things were like that. I mean, just like harsh, you know, just how dare you, attacks, ad hominem attacks against Jason Negri, the author. It's like, come on, guys, let's be better than that. We're supposed to be Catholic. Yes, criticize his points. That's fine. But don't just devolve into Trump's world where you basically just attack and name call anybody who's not, you don't think is loyal to you. Okay, so final points here, I'm going to wrap it up, is I really do think the indicting of Trump is a huge sign of the decline of America. It's another step towards banana republic. I mean, we kind of already are in banana republic, but it definitely is a step in that direction. Unfortunately, a banana republic is kind of the inevitable decline path of every empire. And yes, we are an empire. And I think this is where we're going. I'm hoping we can arrest that development as long as possible. So my kids and my grandkids one day can live in a country that isn't a banana republic. But that's where we're going. I also think, though, as Catholics, we need to put our faith above a party, above a candidate, and even above the country, frankly. That's why, I mean, I've supported secession because I think it's the best path forward for Catholics and for all citizens to break up the country. You don't have to be that radical and think that we have to break up the country, but at the very least, put your faith over the party. And so don't fall into the methodology used by Trump to support him. Also, my other thing I would want to say is I would encourage us all to pray, obviously, for our country, for our politicians. And I think Blessed Carl, I'm pointing at him right here on the video, Blessed Carl, who 101st anniversary of his death was last week. I think we pray for his intercession. He was the peace emperor. He actually reigned over an empire that was a great empire in many ways. And it was arrested and fallen too soon. And so I think we'd be better off, frankly, if it hadn't. If his descendants were still running the Austrian-Hungarian Empire, Europe would be a lot better off than it is now. And so I think we pray to Blessed Carl for our politicians, for our leaders, that they might be better than they are now. So, okay, so that's it for now. Holy Week is this week. So I'm not going to have an interview later this week because it's Good Friday on Friday. I don't think it's really appropriate to post up an interview. A podcast interview on Friday, Good Friday. I just pray that you have a blessed Holy Week, that you really enter into the sacred mysteries. Don't, you know, after you watch this podcast, think about politics a little bit, but then forget about it and really think more about the passion, death, and resurrection of our Lord Jesus Christ. Okay, everybody, until next time, God love you.